We're holding on page Lamed Vov in Megillah, about the end of the narrow lines, almost the end of Os Lamed Hei. We've been learning about various chachamim, where people ask them, what did they do, what special things did they do to be zeichet arichos yomim. The last one we had, Rabbi Akiva asked Rabbi Nechunya, and he not being Rabbi Nechunya's Talmud, Rabbi Nechunya's students were upset with him. They thought that maybe he's saying, like, why do you have to keep on living? And Rabbi Akiva showed his credentials as a Talmud Chacham, so then Rabbi Nechunya starts telling him. He says three things. He says, I never took presents, as it says, v'sarinim atonasich, yeah? I never was umid amidoy, and loy amadzi amidoysai. I was never particular when somebody vexed me or insulted me or whatever. I never took it to heart. Now you have. For obviously, there is a mitzvah in the Torah not to take nekama, but that's primarily as far as actions that a person might do, less so as far as insults and things like that. They were in principle, he might have been able to, but he was machmir on himself not to. And there's also, it means that he would let go of the matter entirely. He wouldn't even keep it in his heart, which he might have been able to do. And we'll learn in a few days, that's the shem at the beginning of the Masechta Tainis. There's a thing over there where it says that a Talmid Chacham is entitled to hold it against the person who insulted him to a certain extent, because the covet of his Torah is at stake. But here, Rabbi Nechunya didn't do that. And the third one is vatrin mamamoni. How you see, I was generous with my money. I would give up something that would by rights belong to me. Marsha points out there's actually a connection between these three hanhogas, because he never took presents. And now here, I was never oimed amidoysai. Now that means the Gemara elsewhere says that if a person insults a Talmid Chacham, he's obligated to pay a litra of gold. A litra is approximately, vaguely a pound in modern amounts. So you have to pay. They have to pay that amount. But Amnon gives a figure of how much it would be worth in sloim or dinarim or whatever. So technically, he would be entitled to that. But I would be moichel to him. So all three things go together. I never received presents, because if I did, then I would say I'm entitled to that litra of gold. I was never oimid amidoysai, therefore I don't demand the litra of gold in the first place, and therefore I was vatron mimamoni, that I'm foregoing something that should rightly be mine. Anyway, so we left off over there to explain what these three hanhogas of Rabbi Nechunya are. The first one, loiti balti matonis, when he says, I never took presents, as we have the example, ki holdin of a lozer. We have in a later generation, Rav Elazar, ki have a mashadir le matonis mevei nesia, when they would send him presents from the household of the Nasi. Rav Elazar lived in Eretz Yisrael. At that time, there was still a Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. So, loi have a shokil, he wouldn't accept the presents. Ki have a mizamni le, and if they invited him to eat with them, loi have a ozel, he also wouldn't go, he wouldn't accept the invitation. He would tell them, do you not want me to live? Where the pasuk says that if a person hates gifts, then he'll live. So I want to be like that, and therefore I don't want to accept your presents or your gifts or your invitations. There is, by the way, the Rashbats, a late Rishon / Uli Achron, points out there can be a situation where a person has to accept gifts for one reason or another. Somebody was asking yesterday about the Rebbe regularly accepted gifts, although that's different because it wasn't for his personal use. It was for the use of Lubavitch. But sometimes you have a person is constrained to accept gifts. But nevertheless, he dislikes the idea. He's accepting it only because there's really no other alternative, but he doesn't like it. That would still be included in the category of Sonim Matonis Yechir. The fact is, by the way, here, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Rav Elazar was extremely poor, and nevertheless, though, he figured he could make do without these presents. On the other hand, Rav Zera, ki avu mashadri le mebein nesia, Rav Zera, who also lived in Eretz Yisrael, so when the Nasi would send him a present, also lay have a shakul, he wouldn't accept it either for the same reason. But ki avu mizamni le, but if they invited him to dine with them, ozil, then he would accept the invitation and he would go, unlike Rav Elazar. Because you would say, it's rather, it's not so much that they're doing me a favor. On the contrary, they're going to be honored by having me accept their invitation. In other words, basically, like they're gaining honor from the fact that a distinguished Talmid Chacham like Rav Zera is joining them. So therefore, Rav Zera felt that it's not that he's taking something from them. On the contrary, he's giving something to them by that. You have that in halacha, by the way. For example, you have in the halacha of kiddushin, normally the man gives the woman a pruta for kiddushin, and that's how kiddushin ochal, but you can have a case where she gives him a present, and he's a chosh of a person, and therefore she has the hanah that he's willing to accept a gift from her, and therefore that hanah itself is enough to make the kiddushin. So similar idea. Okay, we said Rav Nachunya v'leya madziyal midosai, that Rav Nachunya was never particular about his midos, that again, if somebody had treated him badly, he wouldn't look to treat them badly in return, or even hold it against them, or whatever. D'amar Rava, as Rava says, we learned this in Rosh Hashanah. Kol amaver amidosav, when a person foregoes his midos, where he would have every right to be upset with the person and then figure out ways to get back or whatever, but he doesn't. Ma'avirim la'yakol pshav, then Hashem, so to speak, overlooks all his averus and says, you know what, if he's willing to act like that to people, then Hashem says, I'm willing to act like that, midah k'neged midah to him. Shenema, as the pasuk says, no se oven va'over al pesha, Hashem lifts away the oven, which is deliberate averus, va'over al pesha, and Hashem foregoes pesha, which is rebellious averus. So in the simple sense, it means exactly that, that Hashem forgives a person's avoinus and pshoyim. But if it mentions why the two different expressions, nosei oven versus over apesha, and why in that order, means lamin nosei oven, to whom does Hashem forgive avoinus, lamishu over apesha, somebody who is willing to forego the pesha where somebody treated him deliberately badly, and he doesn't do anything about it. So therefore, he's the one that deserves that Hashem will be over, that Hashem will be nosei oven, that Hashem will forgive his aves. So therefore, Rav Nachunya would act like that. Another one. Shah Rebbe is Rebbe Yeshua ben Korcha b'meher rachti yomim. Rebbe asked Rebbe Yeshua ben Korcha, with what zchus did you live long? Now again, Rebbe wasn't a direct Talmud of Rebbe Yeshua ben Korcha, or I think in other places we find that he did learn halachas from him, but he wasn't a regular Talmud of his at any rate. Omalei, so Rebbe Yeshua ben Korcha says, are you tired of me living? What kind of a question is that? Omalei Rebbe, so he answers, so Rebbe answers, Torah, this is Torah, and I have to learn it. Rashi says, maybe I'll be able to be Mekayim, your Hanhogas as well, so that I need to know what they are. And then Marashah says, why is he calling it Torah? Because I'm sure that your Arichos Yamim has to do with Hanhogas in Torah. Omalei, so Rebbe Shurban Korcha answers, now it's interesting, all the ones we had until now had three Hanhogas each that they mentioned. Here Rebbe Shurban Korcha mentions only one. He says, "Mi yomai l'nistakalti b'tzelem d'mus adam rasha." I never gazed at the image of the face of a rasha. The Amar of Yochanan, Mishum Rav Shimon Yochai, osel adam l'istaka b'tzelem d'mus adam rasha. A person is taka osir to look at the image at the face of a rasha. Now, again, you could ask So first of all, Marashah says the reason behind it is because there's tumah in him, but the question would be, if Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it's osur, then what's the chidush of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha doing that? Obviously, then he's just following straight halacha. So there are Rishonim who say that sometimes when the Gemara says osur on such things, it doesn't literally mean osur. It just means that it's the Gemara's way of saying that it's not a good thing to do. So it's not required of the halacha not to, but nevertheless, he was machmir on himself. Another point, actually, the Magen Avraham makes a point. You have halacha and Shulchan Aruch, based on Gemara and Brachos, that if you see a very handsome goy, there's a very handsome person, even a goy, there's a special bracha to make, that you praise Hashem for making such beautiful things in his world. Nowadays, in practice, I don't think we make that bracha ever because it's a little subjective. How would you define who's the most handsome? But in any case, the point is, there is in principle such a bracha. That implies you have to look at the guy in order to see him. So the Magen Avraham points out, you're allowed to look at him, you just shouldn't gaze at him. Stakel means to stare at him. So Rabbi Shimon Korcha was machmir to not even ever look at him, even just a casual glance. Okay, Shenemar, as we find an example, we have a story in Sefer Melachim where the kings of Yisrael and Yehuda and the governor of Edom, who at that point he has sort of the title of king, but really he's a puppet king of a vassal of Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda. Anyway, these three are going to war with their armies against Moav, and they're running out of water, and they realize they're in trouble, so they go to Elisha Hanavi to ask him for a nevuah that they're going to be successful, to help them, to daven for them, that they should be able to find water. And Yehoram, the king of Yisrael, was a Rosh, he was worshipping Avodah Zarah. So when they come, first Elisha says, what are you coming to me for? Go to your Avodah Zarah, Nevi'im, if you need something. And Yehoram says, please, we're in trouble, please help us. And Elisha answers, Ki lule pnei Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, ani noisei, if it weren't for the fact that I'm favoring the face of Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, who is a tzaddik, im abit elecha, otherwise I wouldn't even look at you, the im er echo, I wouldn't even see you. So we see that Elisha would not want to look at the face of a Rosha of Yehoram, only because he's looking at Yehoshaphat, and Yehoram is along with him, does he look at him? So we see that they're not supposed to look at an Adam Rasha, and therefore Rav Nachman, and therefore Rav Yeshua ben Kocha was following them. Rav Elazar Omer Ein of Kehos. Rav Elazar says, in addition, a person looks at a Rasha, then his eyes are going to become dim because of that. Shenemar by Hiki Zokin Yitzchak, as the pasuk says, when Yitzchak became old, Batichena Ein of Meraos, then his eyes became weak, his eyes became blind from seeing. Now, why did that happen? Mishum Istakel by the Ace of Arasha. Because he looked at Ace of Arasha, and therefore that caused his eyes to go dim. Which Marsha says, the reason why the Gemara is doubting that is because what do you need the word Meraos? If Batichena Einav, if his eyes have grown dim, obviously from seeing, that's the function of the eye. Therefore, the Gemara's understanding, Meraos, doesn't mean from seeing, as in that he couldn't see anymore, but rather because of seeing, because he had seen something that he shouldn't, namely the face of Esav. We have to remember, of course, Yitzchak thought all along that Esav is a tzaddik, so he didn't even know, but nevertheless, it still had an effect. So the Gemara asks, V'hog Gormalei, you're telling me that's what caused Yitzchak to go blind? Well, Amar Rav Yitzchak, didn't Rav Yitzchak say, about his namesake, La'olam al tehi kilas hediyat kalabei necha, the curse of even a simple person should never be a minor thing in your eyes, always treat it seriously. Shari Avimelech kilas sara, as we find that Avimelech cursed Sarah after the whole thing, where Avimelech had kidnapped Sarah and taken her to his palace, and then he and all of his retainers and all of his family over there were struck with a terrible disease where all the orifices in their body were closed up, and finally he's forced to return. Hashem comes to him in a dream even, and tells him that all of you are going to die unless you return Sarah right away, and so eventually he has to, and he gives Abraham presents and everything, and Shenema, he says, so Avimelech cursed Sarah, v'niskayim v'zara, and his curse came true in her descendant. Shenema, the pasuk says, hinei lach suseinayim, he says, here, this is for you, a covering of eyes. Now, in the simple sense, Rashi explains on the positive, it means, like he's saying something like, until now, like, if I didn't give all these presents, people would think that, you know what, I had my fun with you, and then I let you go because I don't need you anymore. Now that they see I'm giving Avraham such rich presents, then everybody's going to realize that I was forced into it, and that you're a tzaddikus, and that I wasn't able to even touch you. Anyway, but when he says, ksus einayim, I'll take ksus elakasus, it also has a meaning. Not ksuseinayim that will cover up everybody else's eyes, but ksiuseinayim, there'll be a covering of eyes among, meaning in your family, because you tricked me, because you closed my eyes and misled me, therefore you're going to have that in your family. And the pasuk says, when Yitzchak got old, his eyes became dim. So we see, says Rav Yitzchak, that was because of Avimelech's curse. So the answer is, hovahog gamalei. In fact, both things were needed together in order for it to happen. The Turei Evan, I think, explains one by itself wouldn't have been enough if it had just been that he saw Esav. The fact is, he didn't know that Esav's a Rasha. On the other hand, if it had just been Avimelech's curse, it didn't have to happen in that generation. It could have happened. And Ion Yaakov over here also points out it could have happened many generations later. So, and the flip side of it is it could have happened on Sarah herself. He didn't actually say, when he says Suseinayim, he's not necessarily saying to your descendants. It could even be to Sarah herself. So the two things taken together caused that it happened to Yitzchak. Mind you, I mean, you have a lot of other reasons as well. Rashi on the Pasuk alone brings three reasons why Yitzchak went blind. Another reason is because of the smoke with Esav's wives and their Avodah Zarah. Another one is that Yaakov should get the brachas. Another one is because the Malachim's tears dripped into his eyes. Altogether, between various Midrashim, you have about a dozen reasons why he went blind, but here the Gemara is focusing on just two of them. Rava Amar Mehalcha, Rava says, here's another Pasuk where we also see this point that you shouldn't look at the face of a Rasha. Pasuk says, "Se'es pnei rosha lo toim." To lift up the face of a rosha is not good. Now, in the simple sense, lifting up the face, Marsha points out, usually means to show favoritism to somebody. So it means the pasuk, in the simple sense, is saying it's not good to show favoritism to a rosha. And Rashi also brings on the pasuk over there from a medrash that it also means it's not so good for the rosha when Hashem shows him favoritism. He'd be much better off if Hashem would punish him in this world, and that way he won't lose his place in Adam Abba, etc. But the point is, Marsha says, the fact is that when you show somebody favoritism, necessarily you're looking at him as well. Therefore, we also have in the pasuk with Yehoshaphat and Yehoram, you also have the expression. He says, "Lulat pnei Yehoshaphat melech Yehoda ani noisei." If I weren't showing favoritism to Yehoshaphat, Melech Yehuda, so we see, and then he says, if not for that, I wouldn't be looking at you, Yehoram, so we see, in other words, that Nesias Panim goes together with actually looking at the person. Therefore, Rava can use the positive, Se'es Pnei Rosh Aloy Toi, to mean not just to show favoritism, but to actually look at it. Okay, so the point is Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha told Rebbe, that's the one Hanhaga that I was very careful with, and with that I was Zoicha to Arichas Yom. The Shas Tirosai, before Rebbe took leave of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Amalei Borchein, he asked him, give me a bracha. Amalei, so Rabbi Yeshua tells him, Yehi Rotzen Shtagia Lachatzi Yoma, may it be Hashem's will that you reach half my age. Amalei, So Rebbe asks, why only half? Why shouldn't you give me a bracha that I should reach the same age as you? Amalei, so Rebbe Yishor tells him, Haboi macharecha behema yiru. Do you expect that the people who follow you, that your descendants should be grazing animals? Meaning, in other words, you're the nasi. One of your children after you is going to become the next nasi, which in fact is his elder son, Rebbe Gamliel. The Gemara tells us in Ksuvos became the next nasi. So if you live a very, very long time, what's going to be left for your children to do? They're not going to have anything. They're not going to be able to accomplish in life what they're supposed to be the next nasi. They're going to remain head yotis their whole lives. In other words, Marashah says, okay, then why didn't Rabbi Shua mention that all of them should have arichos yom? Oh, we actually have, in particularly obvious, we have Reb Shimon Menachia saying that the Ba'zikna Ba'seva are Kulam Niskaim of Rebbe Yubavonov, so all of them were Zoicha to Zikna and Seva, but still not necessarily an outstanding Arichos Yomim. Interesting point in this connection, by the way, is that the Tosfos elsewhere discusses, now there's a few places where Tosfos discusses the question whether Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is a son of Rabbi Akiva. There's a Gemara in Bechoris where Ben Azai calls, where he says that all of the Chachamim are like garlic peel relative to me, meaning in other words, they're like nothing. Like garlic peel is very thin and insubstantial, except for this bald one. Now, on the face of it, that means Rabbi Akiva. So then in that case, Tosfos brings up the possibility, maybe Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is so named because he's a son of Rabbi Akiva. One of the arguments that Tosfos brings to bear against that is our Gemara over here, because Tosfos calculates. We know that Rabbi Akiva started learning Torah and married Rachel when he was 40 years old. If we assume that Rabbi Yeshua was conceived and born shortly after that, so therefore he would have been 80 years old when Rabbi Akiva passed away because Rabbi Akiva lived to 120. So it would be he was maximum 80 years old when Rabbi Akiva passed away. Then the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that when Rabbi Akiva was born, on the day that Rabbi Akiva passed away, rather, Rebbe was born. So therefore, so what are you going to say? Tosfos says, if Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha had to have lived to at least 140 years old, otherwise, what's he benching Rebbe? You should reach half my life. It's not much of a bracha to tell him you should only live to less than 70 years old even. At least you should give him a bracha for 70 years. So therefore, Tosfos says, look, if you have it that way, it would mean that Rebbe would have had to be 60 years old at the time. And what's Rabbi Yishev and Korcha telling him? That I'm giving you a bracha for 10 more years of life? That's not much of a bracha. And Tosfos says, befnat, actually, you might even say Rabbi Yishev and Korcha may well have been even younger than that, because he may have only been born after Rabbi Akiva came back from his 24 years learning in the Beis Medrash. So therefore, Tosfos that and a few other reasons, Tosfos says it doesn't seem to work out that Rabbi Yishev and Korcha was Rabbi Akiva's son. With that said, though, there were other Mephoshim who say maybe after all you could make it work. First of all, they say one of Tosfos' problems is why would he be called Ben Korcha? Why not call him Ben Rabbi Akiva? So there is an interesting explanation, which I think I've mentioned in this shiur before. Rabbi Akiva comes out, there's a medrash in Ovis Rav Nosson that says that Rabbi Akiva was actually married before he ever, and had a child before he ever married Rachel. He was widowed or divorced, doesn't say one way or the other, but it says when Rachel finally convinced him to go learn Torah, he had a boy who he and his son went together to learn in Cheder. So in that case then, that would explain why he's called Ben Korcha, because in fact at the time his father was not the famous Rabbi Akiva, he was only that bald guy, Korcha. And second of all, that would answer Tosfos' objections as far as the Seder Azmanim, because it would come out that Rabbi Yeshua may well have been a lot older than Rebbe, such that he's giving him a significant bracha for Arichos Yom. Top of that also, B'chlal, when it says that Gemara in Kedushin, when it says that on the day that Pliny passed away, when Pliny was born, that seems, based on other Gemaras, doesn't always mean it was literally on that day, means that sometime before he was born. Zorach HaShemesh or VaHaShemesh, the point is the Gemara makes the point, before one sun sets, the next sun rises, doesn't always have to mean that literally he was born on that day, it may just mean that he was already born sometime before that. So in that case, Rebbe was not necessarily born on the day that Akiva passed away, he may have been born a few years before. Anyway, continuing on this topic of of not looking at the face of a Rasha, the Gemara mentions Avuha bar Ihi and Minyamin bar Ihi. There were two brothers, Avuha and Minyamin, both the sons of Ihi. Tad Omar, one of them said, Tasi Li, there should come a reward for me from Hashem, Delay Stati Vakusi. I never in my life looked at a goy. V'chad Omar, and the other one has Tasi Li, Delay Abi Shutfus Bahadi Kusi. I would look at a goy, but I wouldn't make a business partnership with him. Which Tosfos points out, now what you have is, Lahalocha, it's not so simple to make a business partnership with a goy, with an Ovid Abedazara, as pretty much all goyim in those times were, because you have a problem. If he comes to court, he may swear in the name of his Abedazara, and you're not allowed to do that. Lo Yishama Alpicha, you're not allowed to cause that because of you a goy should be swearing by his Getchke. On the other hand, what one of these brothers, Avuha or Minyamin Bar'ihi, is saying is, even if we could make arrangements that there wouldn't be a problem with that. For example, we could make arrangements that any time he's going to swear, he'll swear by the name of Hashem, or that there won't even be a need to swear at all, that I won't impose on him any kind of shvuah. Even then, he's saying I wouldn't do a business partnership with him. So that was a midas chsidus, which is. Okay. One more, Shalat Talmidim Rav Zera of Amilas Rav Ada Ba'ava, Mameher Rachti Yomim, they asked Rav Zera's or Rav Ada Ba'ava's Talmidim, asked him, what was your schus that you lived long? So here, now before we had, there were three, and then we had Rav Yisrael and Kocha had only one. Here, Rav Zera or Rav Ada Ba'ava has a whole bunch of them. Omalahem, he tells them, Miyomila Hikpadti Vesirk Besi, I never got angry in my household. Now, there are times when a person, the Gemara mentions that Amman brings it in Hilchos Deis, when a person does have to show a certain degree of anger in his household when something is not being done right. He has to at least pretend to be angry at them. But Rav Zera would not do that. But let's see, Adti Bifnei Mishagodamimani, the second thing, and I never walked in front of somebody who's greater than me. Now, that's also a halacha, actually. You're not supposed to walk in front of your Rebbe, for example. However, Marsha refers to a Gemara in Yuma that when you have a Rebbe and two of his Talmidim walking on the road, the two of them should walk on the sides of him. And Rav Zera is saying, I would always be careful that I'm not taking even a single step in front of somebody who's greater than me. Ben Yehoyada also adds the point. He's saying that even, let's say, that person is greater than me in Torah, but he's younger than me in years. So based on the relative ages, I would be entitled to walk in front of him because I'd be older, but nevertheless, I wouldn't. Next, he says, I never thought words of Torah in dirty alleys where there's human or animal waste or whatever. Again, this is a halacha that Marsha explains, there's a halacha you're not allowed to say Krishna. So Rav Zera was machmir to not even think words of Torah. Actually, the halacha is you're not allowed to think words of Torah in such a place either. So first of all, it's hard to do that. But Rav Zera was able to control himself. But the other point is actually in the Gemara, in Brachas, Rav Yochanan, who was Rav Zera's Rebbe, says that you're not allowed, that you are allowed to think words of Torah over there. And nevertheless, Rav Zera was machmir on himself not to do that. So there's that. Then he continues, V'lohi lachti dalad amas v'loh toto v'loh tefillin. I never walked 4 amas without saying words of toto or wearing tefillin in places where you're allowed to, obviously, because again, when he's going in these dirty alleys, he can't do either. But actually there, the Gemara says that maybe if he really needs to, if he has no other way to walk, then he could cover the tefillin with his hand. But so Rav Zera was always careful to do that. Also, he says, I never slept in the Beis Medrash. Lo shenas keva, v'lo shenas arai. Neither a fixed sleep, as in to go to sleep there for the night, or even a nap. And the point is, now, if he didn't take a nap there, obviously he didn't sleep. Now, first of all, you have the Gemara mentions here in this, so Marsha points out, though, again, this is something that you're not allowed to do. The Gemara elsewhere says, you're not allowed to do that. Rav Zera was machmir on himself to not even take a nap there. The Gemara, by the way, in this parak points out that sometimes, as Talmid Chachamim in a Beis Medrash, do have a legitimate excuse to sleep there sometimes, or at least to nap there, because they spend so much time there that it's practically their house. Nevertheless, Rav Zera was machmir on himself. And Ben Yehoyada also adds a point that it means also, if he's saying, I didn't take a nap there, obviously he didn't sleep the night there, what's the chiddush? The point is, let's say what happened, for whatever reason, he's stuck there overnight. Let's say, for example, it's bad weather and he can't go home. Nevertheless, he wouldn't sleep there. And then he continues, Holy Sasti Vitakolas Chabe, right? I was never happy over something that my friends stumbled over on. Now, again, that's something that's actually also been for or Yivchal Tismach, and it says in Pirkei Avos. But again, we're talking about that he, so Marsha says, for example, you could have, let's say, you benefit from it. Imagine, for example, that you bought something from somebody else at a cheap price. So you have a gain from it. You're not just maliciously being happy that the other guy lost out. You have a genuine gain from it. You have what to be happy about. Nevertheless, Reb Zeira would not. There's a number of other explanations among the Foshim, including, for example, you could have, let's say that another Talmid Chacham made a mistake in understanding something in Torah, and Reb Zeira was able to clarify it. He's not, even though the natural reaction would be then to be happy about that, but I managed to figure it out. Reb Zeira wouldn't, and there are a number of other possibilities as well. And the last one, like Harisi Lachaveri Bachachinosei Ra'amilo Bachanichosei. I never called another person by his chachina, or some say by his chanicha. Now, what are those? Rashi says chachinosa would be a nickname that he personally was given by other people, lignai, a derogatory nickname. Now, Marsha asks, in that case, you're not allowed to nickname, you're not allowed to give such a person a nickname, and you're not allowed to use it. It embarrasses him. A person could lose his place in Elam HaBa for that. So what's the chiddush that he's not calling him that? So one possibility Mephoshim talk about is that maybe by now the guy has gotten kind of used to it, but nevertheless, Reb Zeira would not use it. Then as far as Bachani Chosoi, Rashi says, means even if it's a nickname for the family. So you have, let's say, sometimes you have families that have developed a certain nickname, and they continue with that, so I wouldn't call him by that either, even though you would say, now it's not nothing personal against him, but still he wouldn't. Marsha brings from the Oruch that has a different gyusa, Bachanichosi and Bachanichosoi. Bachanichosi means I would never give him a nickname, and Bachanichosoi would mean a name that other people gave him as a nickname. So it doesn't even have to be a name lignai, it could just be any kind of nickname that I never gave him one, and I never used any nicknames that anybody else gave him. There is also a point, there's a Gemara in Gittin that uses the word Chachinosoi, Chanichosoi, to refer to a family. Interestingly, Tosfos, when it discusses over there, gives an example like the name Eben Ezra, where all the members of the family have the name. It's interesting. In the times of the Balei Tosfos, where they lived in France and in Germany, in their society, there was no such thing as family names. So to give an example, they had to give an example from the Eben Ezras, who lived in Spain, where they had the concept of hereditary family names. Anyway, the point is, so one explanation of it is also that it means that he would never call somebody, Pele Yoyitz actually brings this, that it means that he would never call somebody by a last name without a first name. So Mice and Bechol Yoyim, that people call each other by their last names, but nevertheless, Reb Zeira is saying I was, or Reb Adab Abba is saying I was always careful not to do that. If I'm going to use his last name, then I'm going to use his first name as well. That one may not be, that one, I mean, as much as the Pele Yoyitz says, and he's an Adam Gadol, we do find, for example, we have stories that are told over involving the Rebbe, where he would call for people by their last name, so maybe the Rebbe held that it's not such an issue, or maybe there's a difference when it's in third person versus when you're talking to him directly, I don't know. Anyway, so those are all the Hanhogas of Reb Zeira or Reb Adab Abba, for which he was Zoy Chatari Chosyan. The Mishnah says, V'oid Omer Rav Yehuda. Further, Rav Yehuda says, now the previous Mishnah had talked about a number of dinim as far as the kedusha of a shul, whether you're allowed to sell it, if you do sell it, when you are allowed to sell it, for what purposes can the building be used afterwards. So now, further, Rav Yehuda says, more dinim as far as the kedusha of a shul. If a shul is destroyed, you still can't use it as a place for public estating. Now, you might think it's no longer in use as a shul, but it is a big open area, so it's a very suitable place to gather people for a hesped. Nevertheless, he says you're not allowed to do that, with exceptions that we'll see further on. And he mentions a number of other dinim that you're not allowed to do in it. And then he says, Ve'ein osin osa kapandaria. You're not allowed to use even a destroyed shul as a shortcut. Shenema, the positive Hashem says, I will make your holy places desolate, and that means the shuls. Kedushasan means they still retain their kedusha. Afchein shemim in v'cholot, even when they're desolate, even when they're no longer being used and they're destroyed, nevertheless they still have kedusha. The point is because it says mikdashechem in the plural, and because it first it says Hashem Moisi, and then afterwards it calls it mikdashechem. If it meant that where Marsha brings first of all from the Medrash that now like this, the simple meaning of Mikdashay of Rashi Mosias Mikdashaytem, Rashi explains means that you're not going to have crowds of people coming there anymore to bring karbonis, and therefore it is referring to the word Mikdashaytem is called Tremiskadshim, that people would make themselves holy and tahor to come to the Bais Mikdash. But the Gemara is saying that since it already says Minashamu Darcheichem and Behoisa Artichem Shmama, there's other psukim that say that are saying that the roads and the land are going to be desolate. So therefore we learn it also means that they still retain their kedusha even when they're desolate. And there's also the point before Shem say, because it says Mikdashaytem at the end, post Vashi Moisi, then it's Mikdashaytem, means that even when Vashi Moisi, they're still Mikdashaytem. If it just meant that they were going to be desolate, then it would have just said it's Mikdashaytem, Mikdashaytem Yushmama, or something like that. Okay. So the Gemara says, turn it up on, we learn in a Braisa, Botik Nesias Ein Neugen Van Kalus Rosh. You're not allowed to act in a disrespectful, lightheaded way in a shul. You're not allowed to eat or drink in them. Now we're going to ask in a second, one second, mice and b'chol yom that we eat and drink, and we have fabrengans and shawls. We'll get to that soon. Anyway, you're not allowed to beautify yourself in them, meaning Rashi says, like put on perfume or makeup or whatever over there. Although Mephoshim say it also means like just to relax over there. You can't use them as like a place to stroll around in. You're not allowed to go into a shul where it's hot outside and you want to go into the shul where it's cooler, or in the winter time when it's rainy you want to go inside to get out of the rain. That's not a valid reason to go into the shul. You're not allowed to make in a shul a hesped of individuals, meaning a hesped for an ordinary person where only a few people are going to be coming to the hesped. But as we're going to say further, you are allowed a hesped shodamim. We'll get to soon. Abu Kurdin behen b'shonin behen. But even though a shul is primarily meant for davening, you can read Torah shvachsav over there and b'shonin behen and learn in them mishnayis and Torah shvach there. Umaspidin behen hesped shodamim, and you're allowed to make in a shul a hesped of rabim, a hesped when of the kind that many people are going to attend, as the Gemara will give examples soon. So Rabbi Yehuda says, when does all this apply? When the shul is established, when the shul is in use. Aval b'chorbanon, but when the shul is destroyed, or abandoned, manichon oisan, we leave it, we don't use it for any purpose. Actually, the Gemara, when they're destroyed, manichin oisin, you leave them alone, va'olim behem astovim, and weeds will grow there, v'lo yitloish, and you shouldn't uproot, you shouldn't pull out the weed, v'pnei agmas nefesh, because you want to evoke a sense of agmas nefesh by the people. First of all, it'll motivate them to try to rebuild the shul. How can we leave our shul overgrown with weeds over there? And even if not, if they don't have the ability to rebuild the shul, at least it'll motivate them to do tshuva, so this doesn't happen again. So the Gemara asks us, who said anything about weeds? Where did the Tanakhama say anything about doing anything in there that would prevent weeds from growing? Where now Rabbi Yehuda is saying, let weeds grow. So the answer is, Chsurim Mechser, the Braise is missing some words. V'hochi Katoni, it means like this. Another din you have to do as far as the covet of a shul. Umachab denoisan, you should sweep the floor of the shul. Umabitzinoisan, and you sprinkle water to lay down the dust to prevent the dust from rising. And then, Kadesh of a Yalu Behenasovim, in order that weeds don't grow over there. And now, Om Rabbi Yehuda, Amosai B'Yeshuvan, Rabbi Yehuda says, all the other dinim are true whether the shul is being used or whether it's abandoned. But the din about sweeping and sprinkling water only applies when the shul is in use. When the shul is abandoned, manichan oisam lalos, then you let the weeds grow. Don't sweep, don't do anything, let the weeds grow. Olu b'hem asavim, and when the weeds grow, lo yitlosh mipnei agmas nefesh, then don't pull them out, because in order to evoke a sense of agmas nefesh by the people. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Asi, botik nesias shebabavel al tnai heinasuyin. The shuls in Babel are made on a tnai. They're built to begin with on a tnai that they can use them for other purposes. Now there's machlokas who show him whether this applies only when the shul is destroyed or abandoned, or would it apply even when the shul is actually in active use. So the fact that we, for example, we have fabrengians and other simchas like that in shuls and other things like that, is based on the Rishonim who learned that this din applies even to shul, even to an active shul. If it was built al tanai, then it would be that you're allowed to use it for other purposes. You even have in many places nowadays, they have shuls that are multifunction rooms. You know, they have in schools, for example, very commonly the school shul will also double as a basketball court or a gym or whatever. So that would be based on the Rishonim who say that you're allowed to mix tanai with an active shul. Those Rishonim who say that you can't would have a problem with that factor. Anyway. The Alpha became, nevertheless, Rav Asi says, "En nogin ben kalus rosh." Even when the shul is made al tanai, you still can't act in a way of kalus rosh over there, in a lightheaded, not so respectful way. Again, you have the same machlokas whether this means only when they're active or even when they're abandoned. Or my nihu, what do we mean by kalus rosh? Cheshbonus, to sit there and make calculations. That would be an example of kalus rosh. Now, the poskim do mention, and I think it's actually mentioned in the Gemara someplace else, that cheshbonus from mitzvah are different, which is again why you have that cheshbonus nowadays of the shul finances and whatever are sometimes done in the shul itself, because those would be an example of cheshbonus from mitzvah. Okay. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Asi, based in Shemachashim, Vecheshbonus, if you have a shul where they make the wrong kind of calculations over there, Malinin Boris Ames. It's a shul where they're going to keep overnight a dead body. So the Gemara says, Malinin, Sakhar Daidach, what do you mean? The word Malinin makes it sound like you have a mitzvah at that point. You have a choiva to keep a dead body over there overnight. No, what he means is, so the Gemara asks, Malinin, Sakhar Daidach, Loi Sagya, the Lab Hachi. What does it mean? You can't do otherwise, that once you machashim le cheshbonus, then the halacha is you have to be Malinin by SMS. Ella, what he means is, L'soif shi'alinin by mes mitzvah. What he means is a shul that's treated in a way like that, is eventually going to end up being used for a mes mitzvah. It's going to wind up, Rashi explains, as people, Rahman al-Fan, are going to pass away in the community, and there's not going to be anybody available to bury them, and therefore, of necessity, they're going to have to leave them overnight in the shul. So the point is, in other words, Rav Asi is saying, treating the shul disrespectfully, in one way, is going to lead to consequences like that. You have, by the way, a Gemara in Yevamos that tells a story where one time two of the Chachamim, I think it was Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shura, were arguing on a particular halacha, and they were holding a sacred Torah between them, and each one is trying to prove his point, and then each one of them pulled it in his direction, and it ripped. And one of Rabbi Yossi ben Kisna is there, and he says, seeing such a shocking thing, he says, I'll be very surprised if this shul doesn't end up becoming a base of a deserter once such a thing happened there. And the Gemara says, that's in fact what happened. So we see that's very important to keep, to maintain the kedusha of a shul. And the Gemara tells in this connection, Ravina v'Rav Adar bar Masna habu kaimi. One time Ravina and Rav Adar bar Masna were standing together, v'shalu she'elta me Rava, and they were asking a question in Torah from Rava who was their rebbe. Also zilcha demitra, all of a sudden, a big rainstorm started coming. Rashi explains the word zilcha means a very forceful stream of water, so like a cloud burst all of a sudden. I leave the base of Knesset, and they went into the shul. Now, I just said before, you're not allowed to go into a shul to get out of the rain. Amri, they said, Haidu Gai Linen Lebes HaKnesses, the fact that we went into the shul, Lav Mishum Mitra, not so much because we're uncomfortable with the rain, and therefore we want to get out of it. That's not a valid reason, as we just said, to go into the shul. Ela Mishum Deshmaita Boit Silusa Ki Yoyma Deistina. Rather, the reason is because to learn Torah requires a clear mind without any distraction, like a day of when the north wind is blowing. We find all over Shas, the north wind is the kind that brings dry, clear weather, and therefore it's very good, it helps, it's gentle wind, it puts people's mind at ease. So to say, Yom De'istina means a very calm, pleasant day. So to learn Torah fully requires that kind of the kind of comfort, the kind of freedom from distractions that you have on a day like that. And therefore, in short, the rain is distracting us, and therefore that's a valid reason for us to go into the shul. La'alocha, you have, if you're going into a shul, the talk has to be for purposes of davening or learning, and therefore, if it does happen that you're going into a shul for some other reason, then you say a posuk, or even the Gemara mentions in the sugya, that you sit there for a little while, for sitting in a shul alone, is a certain schus asher yoshevei sefer, and then you have a legitimate reason to go into the shul for other purposes. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Golah, Ches'ir. lately we see, this was in Tavshin Nun Aleph, whatever was saying, that lately we see that the Umas HaOlam themselves are doing actions of Tov and Chesed, which that, with that, they're showing more and more so that they recognize that Yesh Balabayis the Birazu, that this mansion of the world has an owner, as Avraham Avinu discovered. This is all a preparation for V'hoysal Hashem HaMelucha, that the kingship will be exclusively Hashem's by the Geula Hasidah. And the Rebbe was talking, this is a sicha in the about Shabbos Parshas Achrei Kedoshim, Tavshin Nun Aleph, so an year of Tavshin Nun Aleph, these actual days, we were seeing how the Umas HaOlam are preparing and helping the road for the Geula by doing tzedakah and chinuch, which ultimately those things depend on the realization that Yesh Baal HaBayis for Birazu. Halachas of Shabbos, we started talking about yesterday about the dinim of having somebody fill up a keli for you, where we said that you can't measure on Shabbos. Now there is an exception for that. You are allowed to, Rabbi Elzeva reminded me, you are allowed to measure on Shabbos for a Dvar Mitzvah. Examples that it gives in Masech the Shabbos are, for example, to measure a mikveh to see if it has the right shear. At the very end of Shabbos, it mentions an example over there involving Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. Another example would be a child or even an adult is not feeling well, is to take their temperature. So there are certain kinds of measurements that you are, in fact, allowed to do on Shabbos. The temperature, as I understand it, and Rabbi Elzeva, please correct me if I'm wrong, as I understand it, you'd have to use one of the old style mercury thermometers or alcohol thermometers or whatever, where you're not actually writing anything, certainly not the newfangled kind that involve electronics, and not even the slightly older ones that we remember from 20 or 30 years ago, where they would light up LEDs or whatever, where they'd light up LCDs or whatever on it, because that's tantamount to writing. Anyway. So continuing with this halacha, you can have, for example, on Shabbos, you can tell somebody, give me 50 nuts, for example, as long as you're not mentioning an actual measurement or the actual value of it for him, to him. So, adds the detail that, for example, you have, let's say, there's a known amount, how much a certain amount of wine, beer, or whatever is worth. So you're not allowed to mention that number. When you know the actual amount, that is, when you're saying, for example, give me a bottle of beer, let's say, and you know how much there is in the bottle. Nowadays, all of them are marked with amounts, so it's easy to know. When you have something where the price is known, then you have yesh matirin, although really it's also, but it's spashka minig lahokel to be makel on that as well. Practical examples of that, most of the time, it's not like you have an opportunity to go to a store on Shabbos. Off the top of my head, the only example I can think of is when you're in camp, for example, and you go to the canteen on Shabbos to get something, so then you're telling them, give me such and such, and you're only gonna make the cheshbon after Shabbos.